Good afternoon. May it please the court, I'm Jesse Pellant and I represent the appellant in this matter, Crystal Lavatiata. With me at council table is Connor Boyle. This case involves Colorado Revised Statute 1410.123.1c, which is the standing provision for non-parents to file a petition seeking allocation of parental responsibilities for a child. The statute allows non-parents to file a petition when they've had physical care of the child for 6 months or more, and they file a petition within 6 months of termination of that physical care. In this case, Ms. Lavatiata physically cared for the child from the day he was born in March 2003 until roughly March to midsummer of 2010, and her care ultimately ended in August of 2010. September 17th, 2010, Ms. Lavatiata petitioned for an allocation of parental responsibilities to try and get visitation of the child, as the two of them had become family and she cared for him most of his life, about 3 to 5 days a week. Ms. Lavatiata filed her petition seeking visitation within 6 months of the termination of her care, satisfying the second prong of the standing statute. The trial court erred in its interpretation of the statute and read further requirements into the statute, such as the fact that the parents or non-parent must relinquish their care to the care of a non-parent, and that a non-parent must be a psychological parent.
What role does a psychological parent have in the standing inquiry?
It does not have a place in the standing inquiry. That's better suited for the best interests of the child portion of the petition and looking at the merits of the petition once you pass the standing stage of the proceedings. Ms. Lavatiata is seeking to have the court find that she does indeed have standing to pursue a petition for the allocation of parental responsibilities and reverse the trial court's order and remand the case to the trial court for the APR proceeding. I will address 2 points in argument. First, that the recent Supreme Court case in Re BBO simplifies the standing requirements in 1410.123.1c, and Ms. Lavatiata satisfies those requirements. Secondly, in the alternative, should the court determine that physical care incorporates an element of a psychological bond between the non-parent and a child, Ms. Lavatiata meets that standard as well. In In Re BBO, the Supreme Court clarified the requirements of 1410.123.1c and found the statute to be clear and unambiguous and applied the plain meaning of the statute. The court found there's no need for additional requirements to be read into the statute, and the standing provision, and because this is the standing provision and the safeguards are at the next level of the petition when you're considering the merits of the petition for allocation of parental responsibilities.
What do you think the fact that the mother continued to supervise your client's care of the child, what do you think the relevance of that is?
Your Honor, I think that, first of all, in terms of the record, there's sort of facts that go either way, whether or not she...
Right, but the trial court found
that
she did supervise the care of her child.
Right. I believe that in terms of looking at whether or not Ms. Lavatiata should have this particular amount of custodial time with the child and visitation, I think that's when that should be looked at the second stage of this. I don't think that should come into the standing inquiry because, again...
But you're saying that has no bearing, has no relevance on standing. That's your argument, I assume.
Correct. In Re BBO specifically held that the parents need not voluntarily relinquish their parenting of the child, and the non-parent to the non-parent in order to confer standing of a non-parent. And the trial court in this case rested its ruling on the fact that Ms. Lavatiata did not give up her parenting rights. Ms. Trujillo did not give up her parenting rights to Ms. Lavatiata. BBO specifically dismissed the fact that that relinquishment of parenting rights as a necessary portion and factor for standing. The court in BBO simplified the requirements again and held the statutes clear and necessarily only requires that there's care for 6 months and that the petition is filed within 6 months of that termination of the care. The court even clarified what's meant by physical care in the statute, and instead of reading any further requirements into the statute or that particular phrase, the court simply gave the phrase its common dictionary definition and stated that contemplates responsibility for or attention to satisfy to safety, attention to safety and well-being of another. In this case, Ms. Lavatiata cared for the child 3 to 5 times a week, provided a home for the child, food and clothes and toys, paid for karate and t-ball and swim lessons, and helped with homework and completed a reading log for him, spoke with the teachers, spent holidays with him, and all of these facts indicate that Ms. Lavatiata cared for the child during those 7 years, thus satisfying the first portion of the standing statute. Secondly, Ms. Trujillo started to lessen Ms. Lavatiata's role in March 2010 and ended her care ultimately in August 2010. The petition was filed in September 2010, satisfying the second prong of standing, that the petition was filed within 6 months of the termination of the care. With both prongs met, Ms. Lavatiata should be granted standing in this case. Ms. Trujillo asserts that In Re BBO stands for the proposition that a psychological bond must be proven at the standing stage of a petition for an allocation of parental responsibilities. However, In Re BBO only acknowledges that a psychological bond is created by virtue of the time spent between a caregiver and a child. The bond is not an additional element, if you will, to be proven up at the standing stage. However, in the alternative, should the court determine that physical care, as stated in the statute, requires that a psychological bond be proven at the standing stage, Ms. Lavatiata has met that standard. As evidence of a psychological bond, the trial court found that the relationship between Ms. Lavatiata and the son and the child was more like a grandmother and grandson relationship, and even he refers to her as Ama, showing that the trial court acknowledged that there is a psychological bond between Ms. Lavatiata and the child.
Although at all times pertinent, as I understand the record, the child always knew that your client was not his parent.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's the case in any sort of, I mean, even if you have foster parents or whatever the situation might be, I think children are still very cognizant of who a biological parent is and is not. The facts presented at the trial court level indicate that there is a bond between the child because he spent holidays with Ms. Lavatiata, had a room with her, toys, stayed with her 3 to 5 times a week, and the trial court erroneously applied a psychological parent standard to the facts of this case based on In Re CTG and determined that there was no parental void found in this child's life. So the relationship could not give rise to a psychological parent relationship. However, as I stated, the court erroneously applied this additional test at the standing phase. In this case, there was a parental void. It was established that the child's father was absent from the child's life, with the exception of 3 visits during the time that Ms. Lavatiata cared for the child. And in In Re CTG, no parental void was found because the child lived with both of its parents. And so the stepfather, trying to assert standing, was unable to prove that there was a parental void in the child's life. However, in this case, as I mentioned, the parental void existed, and regardless, this test is inappropriate at this stage, and the petition for allocation of responsibilities would look at whether or not there's a psychological parent at the later stage and looking at the merits of the petition. In conclusion, In Re BBO has simplified and clarified what's necessary for standing to petition for an allocation of parental responsibilities, and that is simply the plain language of the statute, that the non-parent care for the child for 6 months or longer, petition for allocation of parental responsibilities within 6 months of the termination of that care, and Ms. Lavatiata has satisfied those requirements. Again, even if a psychological bond must be proven at this stage, it is our belief that Ms. Lavattiara has satisfied that standard as well. And I will reserve any further time for rebuttal. Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Kathy Donnelly, and I represent the appellant in this case. I will do my best to make sure that I will not name the parties by name, but please go ahead and stop me because we obviously would want to keep the name of the child in this case at least confidential. This court should affirm the trial judge's decision in this case for two reasons. One, the district court applied the correct legal standard. And second, Ms. Lavattiara, the appellant, has failed to carry her burden and prove that the district judge's opinion was clearly erroneous, both as to the factual determination that the appellant was not the caregiver within the meaning of the statute, and as to her determinations as to the weight of the evidence, its reliability and credibility of the witnesses.
Do you think the trial court was correct in saying categorically that a non-parent must be a psychological parent in order to attain standing?
Yes, Your Honor. I think at this time we should probably address the elephant in the room. The question is whether the statute, if defined the way that the appellant is asking you to define it, will be constitutional. The answer is no. As BBA recognizes, the only way that we can save the Colorado statute is to afford it the constitutional protections by adding that it is a statute that considers the significance of the relationship between the non-parent and the child and the recency of it. As BBA acknowledges, in going through the analysis of whether the Colorado statute is actually constitutional under Troxell, it specifically says at the standing level, the reason that the Washington statute was held unconstitutional was that it allowed any person at any time to go ahead and apply for allocation of parental responsibilities. BBO says that our statute is distinguishable because of the fact that we have read into the standing part the fact that we will consider the psychological bonds between the parent and the child. Otherwise, you would have a similar situation as we had with the Washington statute. By that analysis, if physical care means anybody who has the possession of the child at any time can go ahead and apply for allocation of parental responsibilities, any person, right now, I'm sure that there are some of us in this room who have children in care of temporary caregivers. So that person could go to the court right now and apply, and if the definition is the person who has the position can go ahead and apply for parental responsibilities under subsection B, they have standing. And that is why BBA recognizes that problem and reads into the statute the factor that we will consider psychological bonds between the parent, the child, and the non-parent. As Google makes it clear, Troxell recognizes the fact that the fundamental rights of the parents to care and to have custody and control of their children are one of the oldest fundamental liberty interests recognized by the Supreme Court of the United States in Mayers versus Nebraska. And that is why Troxell makes sure that none of these statutes that were originally, all these statutes that I think if I'm right, that right now in all 50 states, we have statutes that recognize the fact that under particular circumstances, we allow a very rigid and limited category of non-parents have visitation rights. The reason was that in the new day and age, we all recognize the change of circumstances. It has always been about the balance between the traditional concerns and the current realities of the fact that, yes, non-parents are taking care of the children. But are we going to give every single non-parent who's temporary caregiver in this society the right to go ahead and disrupt the life of the parents who are good parents? The court goes and answer, no. It is arguable. DVO considers that as dividing the standing stage and separating it from the merit stage. Even if we accept that analysis of Troxel, still Troxel is very clear that you cannot allow any person to go ahead and apply for allocation of parental responsibilities. The second consequence of that kind of reading would be the fact that if, as advocated by the appellant in this case, any psychological bond is enough, and it shouldn't be a psychological bond that is very similar to the psychological bond between a parent and a child, then as an example of that, you would have all people who have been abducted in one setting or another, we all are aware of the Stockholm Syndrome. They do develop a bond with the child. The child develops a bond with the taker. But that analysis, if you do not get into the details of what bond, what is the definition of the bond, will allow any person who has come to have possession of the child to go ahead and apply for these parental responsibilities. That cannot be the intent of the statute, and as BBO says, we would not have been able to save the Colorado statute. It would have been held unconstitutional if we eviscerated from its protections, as the parent is persuading you to do today. And which is actually the reason that the appellant has not been able to come up with one case that has granted standing to a non-parent in a setting where the relationship between the non-parent and the child has not been a child of the parental nature, as Troxel specifically states it. In every single case that has been cited in both briefs, if you look at the factual circumstances, they rely heavily on Middleton, almost exclusively. In Middleton, the court finds that the non-parent was considered as a parent by the physicians and by the school authorities. Everybody thought that the non-parent was actually the biological father. Again, in BJ, same. CCRS, the same. And in this case, the trial judge specifically found after two days of hearing, that the relationship between the child and the parent was not a parent-child relationship. Because as Judge Nain pointed out, at any given point of time that they looked at this relationship, it was under the supervision of the appellee, it was under the direct instructions of the appellee as to what to do, how to do things, and it was with the permission of the mother. At no point of time it was established that the relationship between the appellant and the child was of parental nature. And that is why the court eventually concluded that there was no psychological bond as determined necessary under BBO. BBO specifically says that we do still adopt our decision in CCRS and factor in the psychological bond and the amount of time spent. And that is exactly what the trial court did, which brings me to my second point, which is the appellant at no point of time has even argued, let alone proved to you, that the trial court's decision was clearly erroneous. And that is the only way that they could have won at this stage. The mere fact that there might have been disagreements between the testimony and the witnesses who appeared at the trial level does not rise to the level that this court would go ahead and overrule the trial court. Obviously, I'm at this point, I guess, preaching to the choir, but standards review says that as a legal matter, we're going to review this de novo, and when it comes to the factual matter, there has been always given deference to the district court's opinion, especially when it comes to the credibility of the witnesses. And I hate to do this, but just to give you a couple points as to the factual matters in this case that haven't been argued are clearly erroneous. The mother's brother specifically testified that in February of 2010, the child and the mother spent the whole month with him, and there was no single day that the appellant even saw the child. Even the, if we wanted to stick with the bare bone of the statute in this case and take it to, as is, having the physical care for 6 months or more and then applying within 6 months, still the appellant would lose because of the fact that she applied in September, on September 17, 2010. You go 6 months back, it's March. It is clear throughout the record that from the spring of 2010 through the summer, the visitation between the child and the appellant has reduced from one time a week to almost none in August. We have had the Facebook messages between the appellant and appellee as a part of the record in this case. And then we have from January, so if you want to look at the period between March and 6 months before that and establish whether she had applied within 6 months of the March period, we have the gap in February. So any way you look at this, obviously the trial court decided that there was, she'd never had the physical care, never, which made it unnecessary to actually look at and see whether she applied within 6 months.
But the trial court made no findings regarding time period.
Not specifically, but she addressed that there was no physical, that no point of time there was physical care because it was under the supervision of the mother. So by that point, if there was never physical care, obviously you don't ever get to the second prong, but even if you did get to the second prong, miraculously, it still would be obvious that the appellant cannot possibly win under the facts of this case because we have the uncontradictory testimony of the debtor that has not been rebutted by any other testimony from any other party that in the cold month of February, there was no contact between the child and the appellant. So no matter how you look at this, there is no way that the appellant can win on this appeal, and most importantly is the implication of the constitutionality of the statute, Colorado statute in this case. Because if, as I'm repeating myself at this point, if the court agrees with the appellant and her reading that the psychological bonds have no bearing whatsoever at the standing level, that is exactly the situation that Foxhall says is unconstitutional. At this point, I respectfully ask the court to affirm the district court's opinion and award the appellee her attorney's fees. As to the other issues that I might not have had the opportunity to address at this point, we rely on our briefs. Thank you so much.
Zanoy. Counsel, I apologize. Is it Ms. Pellant?
Yes.
Okay. Well, Ms. Pellant, you have 5 minutes and 16 seconds for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. The appellee has stated that whether the psychological parent should be considered at the standing stage in the affirmative, saying that it should be considered at the standing stage. I think that it should be noted that the trial court's interpretation of the statute, as well as whether or not the psychological parent analysis should be handled at the standing stage, is an issue of law, and therefore there is de novo review of these issues. Furthermore, the appellee states that that psychological parent should be addressed in the standing stage, and cites BBO as sort of a ground for that proposition. And in say BBO necessarily talks about the psychological bond and acknowledges the fact that a psychological bond will occur between a caregiver and a child when they have X amount of time together, but does not necessarily use that, the psychological bond, as an element looking at standing at this stage. Again, it does not give anything into addition to the standing requirements. Simply lists the two standing requirements that are listed and states that those are what should be looked at the standing stage. Whether or not there's a psychological bond, whether or not there's a psychological parent, and all of these facts are to be considered during the merits of the petition, when you're looking at the best interest of the child. And that's also why Troxel's not implicated at this point. Troxel is implicated during the merits of the petition itself, and In re BBO makes it clear that that is why Troxel is not implicated at the standing stage, and why the statute does not implicate Troxel at all, because it's something to be handled at the next portion of this proceeding and to be handled once we're down on remand. Furthermore, footnote 6 of In Re BBO, I think, sums up clearly the fact that the two are very separate, standing and the best interest of the child concerning the psychological parent facts, and states, we do not read this decision as injecting best interest considerations into the standing determination, which only resolves the question of who may file suit and does not encompass the merits of the proceeding. The appellant still will stand for the proposition that the trial court mixed the best interests of the child, the psychological parent analysis, and voluntarily relinquishment of parental care into the standing analysis, which was inappropriate, and Ms. Lavatiata should be granted standing at this stage because she has met the simple requirements of that portion of the statute. Thank you. That is all.
Thank you, Ms. Fallon. Thank you again, Ms. Donnelly. Thanks to both counsel for very good arguments this afternoon. They were helpful to the court. And we will take the matter under consideration. The matter is deemed submitted, and you can expect a written opinion to issue in due course.